it kind of does not matter what job you take, you will not have enough money.
If you have a side hustle that's worth doing, it should be your main hustle.
But what does that even mean, to retire?
If all you do is prepare for the future will be here and there will be nothing left for you to do.
Philosophers.
Philosophers.
So, David, have you come prepared with a topic?
I have come prepared with a topic.
What's the topic?
This is going to be a very open-ended topic.
Aren't they all?
Not always. We're going to talk about what people want in our culture, in life, and how they think they can get it versus how they might actually get it. And why our society seems to be so confused about how it doesn't seem to matter how hard they try, they never really get anywhere.
Oh, whiners? Okay,
I'm
being harsh. So what about it? Was there something that prompted you to think of this topic?
I think yes, but I don't remember what it was. So we're just going to...
Perfect. So what if we started like a hypothetical?
Yeah.
So you're 18 years old.
Okay.
Right. In the United States and in a lot of places in the West, like this is kind of the time where it's like you cross the barrier into official adulthood, at least as far as the state's concerned. Mm-hmm. It's like congregations. You can vote.
You have rights now.
Yeah, you have rights now. You're a full-on citizen. Mostly. You can't smoke, though, or drink, but we'll
get it. That's mostly just an American thing. But
that really is mostly just an American thing. And yeah, so it's like, but you need to go make your way in the world now. But it's also at that time when some people, 18 is like kind of the median, but like at some point in your life, you realize that I'm going to have to support myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I'm going to have to make money. It doesn't actually have to be money, although that's the way easier path than being 100% self-sufficient and squatting on land, you know?
Yeah.
Unless you want to live life on hard mode.
Yeah, most people are not looking to live life on hard mode, especially people who wait till 18 to figure out that they have to do that.
For real.
They were probably already living in hard mode and there wasn't a meaningful transition.
Right. And so most of the time, this usually comes with the get a job label.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have parents or you're smart yourself and you decide, I'm going to invest in myself with education because that's how it's always framed. I'm going to pay it.
That's more or less an okay way to frame it. It depends.
So I'm going to go to college and I'm going to spend 4 years in college working hard on an education, definitely not enjoying the finer things about college like partying and socializing and all those other things, even though you can do those things, right? It's not the point. You know, no one goes to college for those things. Those are just tertiary benefits.
Well, some people go to college for those things.
I'm being facetious. Yes. Yeah. I would argue that there's a lot of people that go to college for that reason.
Right.
To be honest.
It's a socially acceptable way to delay entering the workforce.
Yes.
On your parents' dime and get drunk. Yeah.
Yeah. But at some point, you will need to enter the workforce and you are going to make some money. And then it occurs to you that you do not have enough. It kind of does not matter what job you take. You will not have enough money for what you want.
For what you want. Yeah. No.
So now you're faced with the question of how do I get more? And I think this is kind of where the topic lies or begins.
Right.
How do you get more?
And the answer that society tells you is just work harder. And so people do. And that could be, there are a couple of ways that you can work harder. You can work harder by further, quote unquote, investing in yourself by having a job and going to school to try to get a better job. This is the person who didn't go to college right out of high school.
Right.
And thinks that maybe that's what they need to get success. Or there's also the other type of person who's like, okay, I'm just going to work more hours now. I'm going to get a second job.
I'll take those overtime assignments.
Yeah, or do the overtime assignments or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or start a side hustle. Let's talk about side hustles.
Let's talk about side hustles.
Side hustles are mostly a terrible idea. Change my mind.
Okay. Why so?
So, okay. I'm not going to say that like anyone who's thinking about starting a side hustle is wasting their time. I guess the important meme to condense it all to is if you have a side hustle that's worth doing, it should be your main hustle.
Okay.
It's worth starting one to like proof of concept, test something, like low risk way to test something without quitting your job. But as soon as it starts working, you should just quit your job and do that thing if it really is better.
What is a side hustle to you? What classifies as a side hustle? Because I think we maybe had different ideas about what a side hustle is.
I'm going to first use my ultimate conclusion about side hustles, but maybe this is not the way that people actually see them, which is a job that you just care less about.
So your non-primary job, anything that is your non-primary source of income.
Something you do in what would otherwise be your free time to make a little extra money, but you don't actually like spend your time working on.
So it's not a second job where you need the money. This is, you want to make a little bit more that you may not need.
So this is like, okay, someone has a day job, but maybe they also want to like do some sort of gig economy, like Uber pickup or something like that.
Okay.
Make a little extra cash. Or, you know, someone who wants to try their hand at making things, like maybe they have a craft that they're practicing in their free time, and they were doing it as a hobby, but now they're like, I could turn this into a kind of a job. So they come home and they do their hobby, and then they start kind of turning it into a business, but never take it seriously enough to make it their full-time job.
Okay, so
things like that are side hustles.
Okay. Would you consider second jobs side hustles or not?
If you pick up a second full-time or even like part-time job that you like show up and work hours at, I don't think I would call that a side hustle.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, because I kind of thought about gig work too. And that's an interesting thing, because I do think for, not the first time ever, but for in a very mainstream way, being a professional gig worker is kind of a job now.
Mm-hmm.
Like and like my stereotypical image in my head of that is the guy sitting in his cheap, like very affordable, very high gas mileage vehicle, who's got like two cell phones on dash like mounts. One's connected to all the various different delivery and ride sharing services, who's also like watching ads in his spare time to make money, like because there's like websites where you can watch ads and get paid to watch ads. Mm-hmm. Like all these things that like independently are there is no single thing that he does that makes more than 10% of his income. There's just a lot of different things that over the course of a day adds up to a reasonable income. And they're just juggling all of those. And it's strange. And I think the old school version of this was the migrant worker. Like, because this existed, right? You know, or the day laborer kind of profession where you don't know what you're going to be doing day to day, maybe. But you may go down, and there was back when there were job boards where, I actually had a relative who did this. He and my great grandmother just heard that there was work in Florida picking oranges during the season when they needed to go pick oranges.
So they just went to Florida and looked for people who wanted.
Hitchhiked to Florida. And then knew they had a relative that they had never met who lived there, asked around, found out where they were, went to their house and said, "Hi, I am your long distant cousin, so-and-so, related to so-and-so and so-and-so," established the familial connection and said, "Yeah, we're down here to try to pick oranges for the summer to make some cash because there's not a whole lot going on in where we're from." And they said, "Sure. Okay. Yeah, we'll pay you to pick oranges." And they picked oranges all summer. And then when they made enough money, they came home. Like, that was just a thing that they did. And when you're a farmer, that's... when your primary job has large gaps in it of... there's just kind of downtime.
Where you're just waiting on plants to grow or whatever.
Yeah. You know, you can do jobs like that. Like, what is being a farmer when you think about it? Like,
making sure the plants don't die, like, or animals or whatever you're farming.
Yeah. So, but like, what is the average day of a farmer? There kind of isn't one.
No, it's what needs doing today. Yeah.
Yeah. What needs doing. And if you've done
maybe
all the things
needs worked on, obviously you're going to have some daily routine. Well, if you're a livestock farmer, you're going to have some daily routines of feeding the animals, things like that.
Right.
Maybe. I guess it depends on what kind of animals. Some animals feed themselves if you just have a field for them to stand in.
Yeah, and like once a couple, every couple of weeks, you might need to rotate which field they're in.
Right.
Which is fairly trivial with even horses, but most people, you know, in the recent history use mechanized vehicles.
There's some sort of schedule, but yeah, it's not like you just, it's not a 9 to 5. You don't wake up, mm-hmm. have your breakfast and then, you know, say, okay, well it's 9 o'clock. It's time to get started on the work day, whatever that is. And you do the same thing for a few hours and then stop.
And it's also not like rigid, like, oh, I need to move the cattle to the next field over. Yeah, I'll just do it on Monday. It's fine.
Right. You're not going to like, that field is not going to get destroyed because you were a little bit late, right?
Yeah. And you can decide, you know, I'll just go and do it today so I don't have to do it next week. Or I can do it a week early and it's not a big deal, you know? And then in the meantime, it's like, well, I happen to know so-and-so's got a field. I saw that they had a field full of hay. I wonder if they'll let me cut it for them. And you go over there and say, hey, will you pay me so much money to cut your field? And in exchange, instead of money, can I just have some of the bales that I cut? And then the person's like, yeah, seems fine to me, you know? So you bring your tractor over and you cut that. You just figured out that's what you're going to do today, you know, or someone's got a truck that's broken down and you decide to go over and help them in exchange for something. Like, it's just very, yeah,
maybe a favor later, who knows?
Yeah. That's very common, you know,
trading favors, labor trading,
yep. Labor trading. Yeah. And cause if you look on paper at how much like your non mega farmer makes, it's kind of baffling. Like, there are people who their first year of farming will make like $100 in the entire year. And you're like,
how can anyone sustain themselves doing this? Well, obviously, they're growing food so they can eat the food, but
they also own their property. Yeah. They have a house on the property, mm-hmm. you know, all the vehicles, you know, they're also expensing, like the truck that they drive around in is also a work vehicle. Like, everything is a business expense because they're living the business. Mm-hmm. You know, they never clock out really. And so that extra $100 is just money I had left over after keeping the farm going, and it's my life. So I'm taken care of, you know, and that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But peppered in all of that are these little, like, oh, I'm going to go cut hay this weekend or next week for this guy. It's going to take 3 days to cut that field, but I just do that, you know? That's like the old version of it. And it wasn't just exclusive to farmers. I just think farming communities are where you happen to still see kind of that thing happen. But that used to be a big deal. That was way more common, especially when child labor laws weren't as much a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it was actually very easy as a child to just get little work, things like that. And it was,
and you still kind of can. There's agricultural exceptions in basically all the child labor laws, at least in America.
Yeah.
For that reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because it is the life. You can't live on a farm and not... You're going to be so bored, frankly. Like, if you live on a farm and you're not working
the
farm...
There's not really much of a thing as childhood on a farm. Like, obviously, there is time being a child on a farm. But, like, the things that suburban families think of as childhood doesn't exist.
Yeah, like, it's I would say it's a linear progression into adulthood as opposed to like an exponential progression into adulthood.
Right. And there's no like sharp divide between preparing for life and
living it.
Yeah,
like the expectation
is life, but you're a small
person,
unknowledgeable person.
Right. Yeah, so those kind of people, arguably, like, their whole life, farming is a collection of side hustles that are just a job. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you could actually side hustle almost any of the things that you would do on a farm. Picking food and like collecting food from the field that's ripe could be a side hustle. It's not something you need to do all day. Again, mega farms exist where that actually is a full-time job, but that's not the majority of farms. Maybe it's the majority of farmland, but it's not the majority of farms, you know, or... Yeah, I need to go get all the eggs out of the chicken coop. That could be a side hustle, is egg collecting and, you know, whatever. Like, mm-hmm. I know that sounds really dumb, but it's a thing. You know, cutting hay is a side hustle. Like, I knew people growing up that's what they did in the summer for extra money. They would go, because you don't need everybody to know how to operate the machines. They may just need some guy to walk behind the tractor who's baling the hay, like in these square bales, and they just pick it up and throw it in the back of a truck. And they just need a guy to drive the truck slowly behind the tractor so that the guy who's, you know, picking them up can throw them in. There's usually two or three guys and they rotate. That's like a day or two of labor, but you can pay for like 2 or 3 weeks worth of needs in a couple days work. Mm-hmm. But it's hard. It's backbreaking labor, you know? So that's one way that, but I do agree with your notion. I think farmers are a good example of that as well. Like if you just do these little farm things for a side hustle, I think a lot of people that do that have the ambition to just own their own farm at some point and then do exactly what you're saying. I'm doing a bunch of farm work for all these farmers so that someday I know how to do all the things I would need to do when I have my own farm. And now I just have my own farm. And mm-hmm. you may even work for a farmer to eventually take over a portion of that farm.
As an instrument to becoming a farm owner. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think side hustles have their place in transition to something. Again, you can use a side hustle as a low risk way to attempt something. If it turns out to be a terrible business idea, you don't care. You didn't quit your job. Like your life isn't ruined from having done this. So it's fine to test things with that. But like as soon as it starts doing good, like that should just be your job now.
Yeah. I also think, and this is a lost art kind of, doing side work to pay for irregular expenses. Mm. Like I did that. I actually used to umpire baseball and softball
mm-hmm.
back in the day because it paid really well and you didn't have to be an adult to do it. When I was 16 years old, I could make $350 like a night, three nights a week. And then if I did a tournament on the weekend during the summer, I could make like $2,000 in a weekend, which when you're 16 with...
That's a bunch of money.
That's a ton of money. But then as an adult, when I like was switching jobs or moving from one place to another and I needed work, like maybe I moved before I had a job in the new place I was living, I could do that to make extra cash. Or if I did have a job, but it wasn't paying very much and I needed to make some extra cash to have fun in the summertime, you know, I could work that side gig to afford a summer vacation, you know, but once I've saved enough for summer vacation, I'm good. Like it wasn't necessary. It was for other things, you know, or if I, like at one point I had a surgery that was expensive and I needed to pay a very high deductible. So I got some side work to make, you know, it would take me years to pay it off with what little bit of extra I had. And I would not have any fun for those years because if I made the same amount. So,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's something that you don't see people do as much. And I kind of think it's funny because I think that people might still tell kids this. I might be out of touch here, but like when I was growing up, like my old man, if I asked him, I was like, hey, I'd like to go do this thing. He's like, cool. Well, what are you willing to do to make the money to do that? Like if I wanted to go on a summer vacation with my friends and road trip somewhere, and I'm like, hey, can I have some money to do this road trip thing? He's like, well, how much do you need? And he'd be like, I'd be like, I don't know, like a couple $100 because we're going to sleep in the car. We're young, dumb teenagers that don't need expenses.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to spend more on alcohol than housing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So realistically, because maybe we're going to road trip out a few states over to see a band play this summer, you know? He's like, okay, well, go find something to do to make the money to do it. And you would look for, like, you're looking for...
Like a temp job.
Well, okay, you're looking for work.
Right.
You're not looking for a job. You're looking for work.
Right.
And I think
there's... A job that you actually finish.
Yeah, I'm
looking... Not like employment, yeah.
Yeah, like, arguably, those terms should be flipped. I'm looking for a job. Jobs can be done.
Right, not a career.
Work's not done. Work's never done. Careers are never over, but jobs can be done. So yeah, I'm looking for a job. Like, what do you need? What will you pay me some money to do? And then when I'm done, I can leave and it's not a career, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like people don't do that anymore. Very much. Like, I don't feel like that's as common as it used to be. To need to pay for something.
Just do a job. With a goal in mind of I'm going to get money for this and then stop.
Yeah. Or like, oh, I have this thing I want to buy that's more expensive than what I normally, you know, pay for. And I don't want to spend. I
can either wait and save up for this thing, but I want it sooner. So I'm going to make some extra money to get it and then stop.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like the answer to that nowadays is credit. Buy it on credit. You know, you'll get a credit card and pay for it later. Or you'll... I mean, the number of places that have just like built-in credit these days.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever heard of Affirm?
Yes.
So, you know what Affirm is?
Yes.
What is a firm, for those who may not know what I'm talking about?
They are a credit company that partners with various online stores to give their customers financing for items of high-ish price. Sometimes not even high-ish price.
Yeah. You can affirm something for $50.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe for, I guess, probably targeted toward people who are maybe assembling a large cart of not quite so expensive items.
You know what else they do? You can finance down payments through Affirm.
Finance down payments.
I want to buy a $5,000, well, that's pretty much. I want to buy this $2,000 TV.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The store will let me buy it and pay monthly for it if I pay a $500 down payment.
Or I can just borrow $500 from Affirm to pay the down payment and finance the whole thing.
And you'll pay back, like, every 2 weeks, you'll pay back $100 for 10 weeks. Like, mm-hmm. Their payment schedule is not monthly. It's usually in weeks. Like, you pay so much a week. You know, that's, I think, how people are like, oh, I want this thing now. Cool. Well, I'll just borrow the money. I will finance the thing and affirm the down payment. So, zero money down, buy $2,000 thing, and then for 10 weeks, they're going to pay, like, because now you're paying both bills, right? You're paying mm-hmm. your financing, and you're paying the financing for the financing down payment. And so you're saddled with like $300 a week for 10 weeks and then like $50, well, like $100 a month after that for the next 2 years or something, you know. Furniture stores are particularly bad about this. I think it's wild. For some reason, financing furniture blows my mind. Like, I know it shouldn't. It makes sense, I guess.
It makes sense in certain things. Okay, I'm a scenario in which I would consider financing furniture. You know, okay, talk about fresh adult again, right? I'm moving out of my parents' house and I'm getting a new place. I have no furniture whatsoever, but I'm already in a money spending mood because I'm moving, right? So, okay, I want to furnish my new house.
Apartment, more like.
Well, apartment or whatever. Yeah, whatever I'm moving
rental.
Into.
We can just lump them together as a rental.
Sure. My home. I want to furnish my new home. So yeah, fine. Like, I don't want to live in an unfurnished home for the months it's going to take me to save up for this stuff. So I'll just get it on credit. Yeah.
I don't know. Again, maybe I'm out of touch because
it's not something that I actually have done.
I haven't either.
I've never financed furniture. The thing that blows my mind is people who finance clothes.
That's wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Well, yeah, we're going to go to the mall or whatever, some big clothing chain store and get and go find stuff that we want and then put it on the store credit card. Why?
Dude, terrible. Yeah, no, I mean, I'll be honest. I have financed furniture before, but I did it. I could have paid for it, but I chose to finance it because it came with the warranty.
Okay, warranty that was only available with the financing?
Extended warranty was only available with the financing. So I was like, oh, then yeah, I'm just going to finance it.
Another reason that I will finance things, and this is a dangerous thing. It's a dangerous game to play for people who don't really know what they're doing, but I think I really know what I'm doing.
Famous last words.
I will finance things that have no interest on the financing.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, cool, I can put that money into an investment and just make money on that money. And instead of having to just spend the money on the thing that's going to lose value immediately.
Yeah.
So I will, the reason that that's a dangerous game for those of you wondering, how could it possibly be risky to, finance something if it has no interest? Well,
late fees.
Yeah, true. Yeah. If you don't pay it off in time, you will get slapped with all the interest as if you had borrowed it on the credit card the whole time. That's one thing. But the other thing is, okay, cool. That is all well and good, so long as you assume that you, okay, so long as you either A, have enough money in savings that you could have bought it in cash outright, or have a steady stream of income. If you lose either of those, now you're in debt, and you don't have the money to pay it off.
Yeah.
And so, you're going to be late, you're going to end up having to pay all the interest, it's going to destroy your credit, all that stuff. So there is still risk in doing that. Mm-hmm. So long as you are sure that you can actually pay it off without ruining your life, then, yeah, go for it.
Yeah. But, like, I distinctly remember adulting for the first time. Man, I bought used for garage sales. Like, mm-hmm. I bought used everything. Hey, look at this chair. I know it looks like garbage, but my guy, it's $10. I furnished my house with, like, leftovers.
Mm-hmm.
And then selectively upgraded from there. Like, once a year, it's like, here's my biannual or biannual? Is that every? No, biannual.
Biannual is every 2 years.
Yeah, yeah, semi-annually, I would buy a new piece of furniture and be like, look at this new desk. It's $200. It's nice. Like, that was a big deal. Mm-hmm. It's IKEA, but it's new and it's mine. And, you know, that's how I got started. And I think that's very common for most people. Like, here's a maybe gross thing to think about. I don't know. I slept on the same mattress from the time I was 12 to the time I was 22 years old.
That closely matches my experience, yeah.
Yeah, because you take it with you when you leave. It's like, well, I mean, this was my bedroom at home, and I'm leaving, and
none of you guys want this, so I'm taking it.
Yeah. You know, this room is... Okay, here's another thing. If you still have a room at your parents' house when you move out, you're not fully adulting. You have a if you have a safety net like that, in my opinion, like, that's not... You should take those things with you to the next place. And that's your home now. Like, I'm not saying you
can't... Yeah, you're not really moving out if you don't take all your stuff with you. Yeah.
Exactly. You're not moving out. You're just...
staying somewhere else for a while.
Yes. And hear me out, though. Like, that can be a viable strategy. Like, if you're going to college and you're living in a dorm, yeah, leave your crap at home.
Don't get rid of your room, yeah.
Although, seriously, evaluate the cost of rent in places nearby, because dorms are usually way more expensive than necessary. Although they usually achieve this by having way worse living conditions, like communal bathrooms and stuff. But, like, you know, ew. But,
yeah,
I don't know. So, anyway, yeah. So, how do you get beyond that part, now that we've reminisced about being poor?
Yes, now that we've talked about being poor.
How do you unpoor yourself?
How do you unpoor yourself? I think one thing is that the first thing before we can talk about, like, actually what we can do to actually achieve success is not setting yourself up for failure.
Step one.
Don't fail yourself. People who go to college and are, like, super picky about what school they want to go to right out of high school.
Dumb.
Very stupid.
I'll give you a caveat, though. 99% of the time, very stupid.
Okay, yes. There are certain careers that if you really want to do that, then yes, it does matter what school you go to.
And they're not the ones that you probably think. The careers that are the most common are the ones where the school matters. Hear me out. Teachers.
Mm.
How do you make any good money as a teacher? You go get a Harvard education and you teach at a private school.
Yeah.
And private schools are going to care about that because they're high on the supply of education is important because they're a school.
Yeah.
But if the job is high paying, right? It doesn't matter. Programming's a great example. I don't care if you're a Harvard programming student or you went to, like, BFE tech school.
Or didn't go to school at all.
Didn't go to school
at
all.
As long as you can show me that you're good.
Yeah. And that's another point, I guess. If you can just demonstrate your ability, your credentials don't matter. It's really hard to demonstrate a teaching ability without already getting the job. And it's also really hard, I guess.
It's like people who worry about their high school GPA.
Lol.
Literally no one cares. Literally no one will ever ask you that except the university you're applying to. Those are the only people who care.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so
as somebody who graduated high school with a terrible GPA,
same,
and has a decent paying job now,
as someone who didn't graduate from college, let me tell you, yeah, it's a similar situation depending on where you're at, you know. Yeah, education can be good, but I think the vast majority of people I know and have ever encountered, which again is anecdotal, but it's very easy to encounter people who have gone through it and gotten an education. It's not a guaranteed pathway to success. Go count the number of bachelor's degrees working at fast food restaurants.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, I know there are statistics that say people who go to universities are more likely to make more money. Okay. But are those people...
It's the people who are making lots of money pulling up the average.
And how many of those people are working jobs that they actually didn't need to get a university degree in to work?
Right. They just happened to get a degree.
Another...
I think there's... It's a correlation, not causation problem. Like, someone who has the wherewithal to finish college can also probably get a good job.
Yeah.
Like, has the wherewithal to get the skills needed to get a good paying job. And they could have done it anyway without school, but they were taught that they needed to go to school, so they went.
Yeah, and hear me out. I mean, it's enticing. If you're an 18-something, and which sounds more fun? Going to school for 3 hours a day and getting scholarships that pay for everything, or working 40 hours a week?
Right, I'm going to school.
Yeah, go to school. It's better. It's more fun. Now, and I think this is something too, that it also depends on what you're trying to do in your life. School can be just as much of a hindrance as a helper. You know what I mean? Like, if you're out there, if you're you, dear listener, if this is you, if you want to get a job being a programmer someday, I would seriously consider, like, 4 years. You could probably, if you took 4 years not paying for school and just dedicated yourself the same way that you would TM that you were in school to learning the craft, you will be hands down better than anybody who comes, most people that come out
anyone
of
anyone who has the motivation to actually do that will be one of the best programmers that you ever met.
Yeah. That's all it takes.
Yes. Someone who's actually motivated to do it versus somebody who went through school with the motivation of deadlines and grade point averages.
But what about the other things people tell you as to why it's important to go to school? What are the other memes that people have out there? So another one I can think of is, for example, oh, well, you need to go to college, not just to prepare you for a job, but it's also a great place to meet people.
I did not meet anyone important in college.
Fair. But which school you go to can put you into exclusive networks of people. Dude, people who get you to try to join alumni networks, hilarious.
They're being paid to tell you to do
that's a cult. Yeah. I that's up there with Disney as far as how much a cult that is.
Yes.
Like people...
Ugh. It's people who were also sold that same lie and now have to sell it to you.
Yeah. It's
to justify themselves.
MLM University. That one's rich. It's fun.
It's fun. Okay. There are cheaper ways to have fun.
Yeah, much cheaper ways to have fun. Hear me out. If you want to have a real good time, borrow the same amount of money you would have gone to college and just live on that doing whatever you want for 4 years. You're going to have way more fun. And you're going to be just as financially destroyed. So, like, might as well, you know? What about this one? It teaches you how to work. It teaches you how to be in a more professional environment. Like, someone's told me before that, like, well, the reason you want to look for a college grad is you want to look for somebody who has spent 4 years able to meet deadlines and complete tasks and stuff like that.
I think there is a little bit of merit to that. A little bit.
I do too, although...
It depends on what field. Again, you know, with our personal field of programming, this is one where someone can easily just show up and demonstrate skills, so I don't care about that.
Right.
I care about what you can do. But there are other fields where it may not be so easy to demonstrate your skills in, like, an interview. And so, yeah, proving that someone has the discipline to meet deadlines and get through something for... several years, one after the other.
Stay committed.
It does say something about that person's character that they were able to do it.
Sure. Although, and I guess the other thing about that is, and because I was going to say is, well, if I had a good enough GPA in high school, doesn't that already show you that I know how to do those things? I think the difference is that no one's making you go to class in college.
Right. You choose to be. I think that is the fundamentally different thing about college. And that was one of the valuable things that I got out of college, was being introduced to the world of adults interacting with each other, like, and not caring so much about the petty stuff that high school cares about.
Yeah.
like this is kind of a trivial example, but it's something that is jarring to a lot of new college students. If you're in class and you need to take a phone call, you can just walk out and take the phone call and no one cares. Yeah. High school teachers will lose their mind over that.
Yeah, those authoritarian Nazis that call themselves high school teachers.
You will literally go to jail. Not really, but...
You'll go to school jail. Yeah.
Yeah, you will go to detention.
Detention.
Which is school jail. And they will confiscate your property from you for that grave offense.
Which literally does not exist in college.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Detention doesn't exist. If they don't want you there, they'll just kick you out.
Yeah.
Like, just don't come back.
Yep.
But you'd have to do something very bad to get kicked out of college. Yeah, you are introduced to the world of adults who actually care about things that matter and don't care about things that don't. And so long as you are not like actively disrupting the rest of the students, no one cares.
Yeah.
No one cares if you show up to class. A lot of professors don't even take attendance.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
The only reason that they might take attendance is if there's like scholarship programs that require it.
Like, or it's like a freshman level course and they do it to kind of up that 1 year at least retention rate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I see that where it's easier, it's more familiar to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because some people experience, oh wait, I don't have to go to class.
Guess I won't.
Never does, and then they drop out in 6 months, and that's bad for the university's metrics.
Right.
So after the first year, they don't really care.
No one cares. Because they have your money. You're paying money to be there.
Yeah.
Probably.
Well, someone's paying money for you to be there.
True. Yeah. Even if you're not, someone is paying the money for you to be there. So they don't care if you show up or not, as long as you keep paying the money.
Correction. No one's compelling anybody to pay money for you to be there. Because arguably, people pay money for you to go to high school, too. But they're being compelled against their will to do so. Mm-hmm. So it's a little different.
And you're being compelled to be there.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the whole thing. So anyway. So that's college. Yeah. Okay. To wrap up college, how to not set yourself up for failure. If you decide that college is right for you and the career choice you want to make, don't be picky about schools, except for those very specific fields that actually do care about that, mm-hmm. which are not many. And spend your first 2 years at a community college, because literally nobody cares what school you went to take freshman comp.
Yep.
Like, first 2 years of college is just more high school, but without the drama.
Yep. No one cares where you sit in the lunchroom.
Right. And if you can, convince your parents to let you stay with them, because that's a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I was going to say, and don't half-ass it. Don't try to work and go to college if you don't. Avoid that if you can. I know some people make it work. I did it.
I did it also, yeah.
But it's difficult. It depending on what kind of work you have. It takes away your time. The iron triangle of being a working college student exists of you can have four things. You can actually succeed in your education, have a job, sleep, or have a social life. You can pick three. That's, I guess, the iron square.
The iron square, yes.
Yeah, you can pick three of those things. You cannot have all four. Some people would say pick two, you can't have all four. But I think it's Depends. A little bit more than that. Quick anecdote, I guess, because we always had to have an anecdote about a YouTube channel. Are you familiar with The Hacksmith?
No.
You're not familiar with that YouTube channel. So he's, I think, I don't know if he's Canadian. He's a guy who makes cool things. He's an engineer who makes cool things on YouTube. He actually talked about how he was able to manage making all of those things work in college. And it was by adopting a like experimental sleep schedule of only sleeping. Like, he consistently would only sleep like 6 hours a day by taking 3 2-hour naps on a rolling schedule. And that's how he made being an engineer and having a social life work and have a job.
Hmm.
But he's also like devoted his life to building special, like he was doing weird stuff, like oxygen tank in his room and gassing himself up with oxygen to wake up on a timer. Like, don't do this. Obviously.
But you need to know what you're doing or you're going to hurt yourself.
I'm trying to illustrate the point of, this guy's very smart, does really cool things. He still had to like arguably build projects to enable this type of thing. It's very extremely difficult to do. But anyway, so yeah, enough about college. If you're going to do it, do it. Actually do it. Care about the things that are important. You know, don't care about the things that aren't actually that important. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know, definitely don't ask. guidance counselors are not your friends. They cannot be trusted a lot of the times when it comes to school.
No, their job is to get you to go to school.
Yep. And then if you, and I would say don't even talk to people who are in college. Because the effects
they're biased.
Yeah. They drank the Kool-Aid.
They have buyer's remorse. And they
you know.
And they want to justify their purchase decision by getting you to do it too.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. So next, the actual topic today. Now that we've done like, what, 30 minutes of preamble? Talked about
hard work. Time for part two, success.
Yes.
How do you succeed? Well, money is part of it. Well, what do we mean by success? That's important.
Some would say it's subjective.
Success is subjective. Only you can decide if you're satisfied with your life. I think that is actual success, being satisfied with your life. Whatever that means to you.
I think a way you can almost summarize that is, like, do you end each day wanting to continue to do the things you're already doing? Like, because I think a lot of people categorize, like, a lot of people will say that retirement is the goal, right? That's success. But what does that even mean, to retire?
Yeah, what do you do in retirement?
Well, a lot of people think that you just don't do anything. It's like, oh, I don't have to work
anymore. Stay home and watch TV.
Yeah, you do the things you did after work when you did work, but you do them all day. That's a great way to die early, in my opinion.
Depends on what you do after work.
Sure.
As someone who gets busy with lots of things that people might consider work after work.
Yeah. If you're,
because that literally is what I would do. If I could retire tomorrow, I would just do the things that I do after work when I would normally be working. But those things are not sit at home and watch TV.
Yeah. So I guess in a nutshell, it is different for everybody. And I guess one more quick touchback on college. That's another excuse people give to go to college. I don't know what I want to do, and I'm hoping college will let me figure out.
It won't.
It will not.
It will just take your money.
It will just take your money and try to gaslight you into picking as many things at random as possible so that you stay longer than necessary and spend more money. The number of people I have watched jump from program to program to program to program, spending tens if not hundreds of thousands of dollars just to, air quote, figure out what they want so that by the time they do figure it out, cool. Now you can start doing it with like $200,000 worth of debt. Good luck.
Yeah, good job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So success is totally subjective.
It's entirely subjective.
But it's I think content. Contentedness is success.
But an excellent universal instrument for success, whatever that is money. So we're going to talk about money.
Is money? Can money? What is it?
Can money buy happiness?
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Money cannot. You cannot buy liquid happiness.
Well.
But I can buy a liquid that makes me happier.
Because I talked to alcoholics, because they would disagree with you. Can buy a liquid
that makes me happier. Yes. Yes. Money cannot buy you happiness, but it can buy you stuff that does bring happiness. So close enough.
Oh, it can also, if you, depending on your philosophy about happiness, see our episode. I forget what it's called, but we have one about this. I need to probably look it up, but. Where happiness doesn't exist, it's minimizing suffering.
Was that utilitarianism? Did we do an episode on utilitarianism?
It's not utilitarianism. There was a different one we did. It was an actual episode where we talked about philosophy, and because I remember doing research for it. But in a nutshell, instead of trying to be happy, try to remove things from your life that you don't like. So for example, money can help you do that. Oh, you know, I don't like all the noise of living in a city. Cool. Make enough money to afford living in the country, which actually is less money than living in the city. But like, you know.
Depending on what kind of life you want to have in the country. But yes, generally.
Sure. You know, but whatever. Money can help enable things that will help make you happy. Mm-hmm. Or disable things that are making you unhappy.
Yes. So, money.
Money.
Step one, get a source of income, obviously.
Step three, profit.
Step three is profit, so let's talk about step two. step one was profit. Wow. Because we have to start with making money.
True.
So step one, profit. Step three, more profit.
Profit harder.
Step two is understanding how money actually works.
Yeah, that's true.
And applying that knowledge to your life. So that the system does not abuse you, because The system will abuse anyone who doesn't understand how money do.
Yes, that is true. You know more about money than I do, for sure.
But me? By the way,
yeah, you do.
Personally?
Yeah, you okay. Personally, I think, know more about money than I do. But if you, I think a good example of this is look at two people, and I think if you don't know us probably, but if you did, this would be an example. Find a person that knows how to budget and find a person who doesn't, but they make the same amount of money.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing how much wealthier the person who budgets seems on the surface than the person who isn't. Like, there's a correlation, right? If you don't know the people, you would assume the person who's bad with money makes more money.
Right, because they're spending it on stuff to look good.
But as soon as you see those people every day, like, I distinctly remember in college, there were two guys that I was friends with that were roommates. One made no money, but budgeted so well that he somehow had money. I actually still to this day don't know how he pulled it off, but he managed to have no job and make money on university. The other guy had a job and was constantly broke, but he had really cool clothes, a nice car, and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that's kind of a meme these days, is people are like, yeah, get rid of the flashy stuff. You know, that's just fake money. Get real money. And they show like stonks.
But they're not entirely wrong.
They're not entirely wrong.
Usually people who talk about that stuff are trying to sell you something.
Also true.
But they're also not wrong. Yes. Reject clothes, embrace stonks.
yeah. But I will say that budgeting, if you don't know how to balance an account, people used to say, if you don't know how to balance a checkbook. Yeah,
the first step to understanding money is understanding your own money.
Yes.
Which is what budgeting is about. Budgeting is about understanding, okay, cash I have this flow. Money going in. Where does it all go?
Yeah.
Make a budget.
Yeah. Like, if you don't know how much, if you right now do not know what your monthly expenses are, or easier way to think about this, if you have a job or you have income right now, if it stopped, how long could you keep living the way you do right now?
Yep.
If you don't know, you don't know how to budget, or you haven't budgeted.
If you've been getting consistent pay raises but are still broke, you don't know how to budget.
You don't know how to budget. Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's also one of the easiest ways, because it really, like, managing a ledger is what budgeting really is. Cash flow. How much money comes in? How much money goes out? Where does it go?
And where does it go? And so if I want to have more money for X, what Y do I need to sacrifice to make that happen?
I think that's also the core tenet of budgeting. You have to understand that
it's all a trade-off.
Money in has to equal money out.
Right.
Or there's a problem.
You cannot materialize more money.
Yeah. Even though my anecdote about the guy who seemed to magically be able to do that, the
real answer is he already had money.
Well, no. The real answer is that he was amazing at minimizing cost.
Yeah.
That's how he did it. He did actually have income, but he had at one point in the year, he would make money. He would get all of his student loan stuff. Like,
yeah.
All of his
loans and
scholarships and stuff and grants, yeah. They would come in.
And he would just make the money work because he had a budget. Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, that's the most important part. But then I think what you were actually trying to get at is once you mastered budgeting, like if you haven't mastered budgeting, pause this right now.
Yeah, now that you're not losing money, like now that you're not losing every single dollar you make.
What do you do with the leftover money?
You must put it to work, as they say.
Yes.
And this can take many, many forms, but they all essentially resemble the same thing, which is acquiring assets. What is an asset? An asset is something that actually has value and produces value for you.
Over time,
as opposed to a liability, which is something that costs you money, and that's it.
Yeah.
Which is most things that people buy.
Yeah. I think some people also break this down between expenses and liabilities. Some people will say that a liability is like an asset, but bad, because it costs you money over time, whereas an expense is something that's a one-time
purchase. Classic liability
is
a car.
Yes.
If you buy a brand new car, it loses value immediately because now it's a used car.
Yep.
As soon as you leave with it.
Yep.
Because human psychology be like that.
Yep.
Yeah,
you buy a $20,000 car, now it's immediately worth 10. Maybe.
Maybe not that dramatically.
Just for the hypothetical.
But yes, yeah, worth significantly less. And will become worth less the more you use it, because now it's accruing wear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's costing you more money to maintain. You're going to have to get the oil changed. You're going to have to continually fuel it. I guess the fuel itself maybe is not really part of the car. It's just that's an expense, not a liability. But anyway, yeah, you're damaging the tires over time.
Yeah.
You're damaging the engine over time. Everything about it is falling apart every time you use it.
It is a hole in which money disappears.
Right.
In your budget sheet.
Not quite as bad as a boat.
Jesus
Which
Christ.
Is the ultimate liability. Boats and RVs are the ultimate way to lose all your money.
RV/camper.
Yeah, so boats, financial advice on philosophers. Never buy a boat or an RV.
If you own anything that could be classified as a recreational vehicle, which by the way includes boats, all of those are holes that money just vanishes into.
Yeah, let me tell you a great secret. Whenever you want to go to the lake and do something, rent a boat.
Yes.
And that's it. Yep. Rent it and make the maintenance somebody else's problem.
Yep.
Anyway, but yes, assets, not liabilities. That's the main thing that separates people who work hard from people who succeed. The people who succeed may also be working hard, but they're working smart as well. They're putting their money in places so that it makes more money on its own. This is not a financial advice show, so we're not going to go into any specifics about that. But I'm sure you can find somebody that actually does know about money to talk to you about that.
Yeah. The internet is full of them.
Well, be careful on the internet, though. There's also, was alluded to earlier, there are also plenty of swindlers who will take your money pretending to be people who know about money.
Right. And I don't know. Let's address some of the common pitfalls with that while we're addressing how do you even know, right? One of the things is it's never too late to start, although starting sooner is better.
Sooner is always better, but it is not too late. Yeah, you're right.
It's never too
late.
Unless
you're literally dying, but...
Yeah, but like...
There actually is a threshold after which it's probably better for you to just spend all your money trying to enjoy your last moments, but we're assuming that most of our listeners are not in that position, so...
It is a lot later in your life than you might expect, where it's just no longer worth it, and you might as well just keep on keeping on.
Right.
And then when it comes to trust, I would argue that hard work comes first. It is easier to learn how to work hard than it is to be successful. Like, and you can mix both of these things for the maximum effect, right? And I think it's easier to start with hard work. Like, you could have all the investment knowledge in the world and have no money to do it with, and you're going to make no money.
Right.
Now,
that's why I said step one was have income. You have to have money coming in to be able to do any of this.
Right. And it needs to be consistent. You need to be able to both support yourself today and be buying the future for tomorrow that you want.
Let's talk about buying today versus buying for the future, because this is actually the ultimate trade-off.
Yes.
Because we've said many times on this show, and I will still say, enjoy life today.
Yes.
You should always enjoy life today. Tomorrow is not guaranteed. As much as I think that you should prepare for the future, and that is a key component of success, is preparing for the future. If all you do is prepare for the future will be here and there will be nothing left for you to do.
Well, there's always future until there isn't.
Right. It's the trade-off between enjoying life today and enjoying life tomorrow, but you don't know if there will be tomorrow. So also I would say you are not a success if you dedicate your life to just making number go up and pretending like you're preparing for the future, and then you like die in a car wreck or something like that. Like, and you were never happy. Like, that's a failure.
Yes.
So don't do that either. But yeah, I think the key thing is, if you only have so many hours in a day and you only have so many years to live, if you pour all of your energy into just working harder, hoping that success is just going to come to you, it won't. You're going to waste your life chasing a dream that was never real. And you need to be smart about what you're doing with everything that you earn from your hard work.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what we were originally trying to tackle with this episode, is that, you know, there are many people, there are people that I deeply care about out there in the world right now that they worked hard their whole life and they've already been passed up by their offspring or people way younger than them. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand it. And the American, there's kind of like the American dream is tied to, if you just work hard and air quotes, everyone's favorite phrase, pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Which, by the way, is physically impossible.
But do you know what the bootstraps really are? It's assets, I would argue. But because you have to have bootstraps to pull on in the first place, and then once you have them, they will start to rise. Like in the asset analogy, work hard to acquire assets, then let those assets mature over time. And that's the other thing too, is you can't force this process. Time.
The only proven method is waiting.
Yes. Yeah. Time in the market beats time.
Timing the market.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Only some kind of super genius can actually time the market. And there are far fewer of those than claim to be.
Oh, and there's even more people than that are just lucky. And that's the other thing that's kind of disheartening.
Yes, is that there is a big component of luck to people who are able to get away with that. So don't count on luck and count on things that are proven to work.
Yeah. And I know it's going to be hard because, like, I distinctly remember Bitcoin being a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And me being like, oh, that's kind of cool, but I don't know how to get into that. Cool. And
now you sure wish you had.
I sure wish
you would have been lucky if you had done that.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of funny too, because if you ask most people, like, what were your biggest financial successes in your life? They'll have to struggle to come up with it. But if you ask them, what are the three things that you missed out on financially? They can immediately come at you like, I would have bought Apple, Amazon, Bitcoin. That's the new ones. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, it was Berkshire Hathaway, you know, like Coca-Cola, Walmart. Like, there's always going to be the next big thing. But all the people who made it big, and this is, like, I think one of the biggest red flags, if someone made it big in the stock market and, like, is one of those exceptional people, a lot of their advice is, I would say, tentatively useless, because they didn't...
That world doesn't exist anymore.
Yes. Yeah. There will not be another Walmart because Walmart already happened.
Walmart is here. You can't find the next Walmart. Yeah.
Yeah. There will not be a new Amazon because Amazon's already here.
Actually, okay. Very, very short tangent about that. I had a thought the other day. Amazon is actually the second of its kind. You know who came before?
Mm-mm.
Sears. Amazon is the new Sears.
On the internet, yeah.
Yeah, it's Sears. It's online Sears. And Sears could have been Amazon if they weren't dumb.
Sears could have been Walmart if they weren't dumb.
True.
Yeah, but...
That's it. That's the end of the tangent. But
tangent over.
Yeah. Sometimes there is a next one if the first one... isn't smart about their future.
Yeah, but if you're stacking all your chips on red trying to, like, make it happen, I think the more you mess with it and try, like, the number of people I've watched who have been like, I've got $1,000 I'm going to put in the stock market and we're going to make money this week and lose it, versus the person who just says, I put $1,000 in stock market this week and I made $2.
Outstanding.
That's actually outstanding.
Outstanding work, yeah.
Good job. Thumbs up. You did good. You did good, kid. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, okay. Yeah. The only... financial advice that I am willing to give today about the stock market is that a very healthy thing is to buy and then just not look at your portfolio.
Forget
for
about it. Yeah.
Don't look at it until you're ready to buy some more. Like, because yeah, the amount of mental anguish you will save yourself by not looking at it and watching the numbers go up and down every day. Yes.
Yeah. So here's one last one. There are people out there whose entire job it is to help other people who are bad at this, like me.
Yes.
It's called financial planners.
Or financial advisors.
Financial advisors. Kind of the same thing.
Kinda. Also, disclaimer, that title means different things in different countries.
Yes.
And in some places, that is a much sketchier job than it is here. Financial advisors / planners are very trustworthy here in America, usually.
Fiduciary responsibility.
Yes, they have legal fiduciary responsibility they have to adhere to, much like an attorney has a duty to be a zealous advocate for their client and not do anything, not have any conflict of interests and undermine their client. It's the same thing here. Not the case everywhere. Do your due diligence. Titles are different for these kind of people in your country.
Well, and I would also say even within the United States, that's the key word you're looking for. You're looking for a fiduciary.
Yes.
If that's nowhere on their stuff, sketch.
Yes.
But also reputation matters. Because there are better and worse people at this, and they cost different amounts. Now, I would say approaching one of these kinds of people with no money and being like, I am here to stock market. I have no money.
First of all, you should already have an emergency fund of money. You should have money.
Well, okay, let's back up. Let's talk about the people in this arena. Mm. What's the difference between your tax filer, your accountant, your financial advisor, and your broker? Those are four people you hear tossed around, and maybe sometimes your banker, all that's less of a thing these days, mm-hmm. your lender. Those are like five people that exist in the space that if you're not financially educated, like I wasn't, I know what a banker is, and I know what an accountant is, I think, but all these other people, I'm not sure where their responsibilities start and end. So can we briefly go through, like, at the high level, what each of these people are useful for?
Okay.
So, accountants. What is an accountant good for?
We're talking about, like, a personal accountant.
Yeah, like a CPA.
Yeah. Well, my primary relationship with the CPA is filing taxes. Going through any financial tax-related documents that I have to try to make sure that I am fully compliant with whatever tax requirements there are, and get the best result that I can get out of my tax filing. And I don't know, the only other things that I can think of that like a CPA would do for an individual would be like maybe some level of business advice. If you wanted to go into business, accountants would be a good place to start. Mm-hmm. to learn about the different tax implications of whatever type of business that you could start, things like that. But that's getting away from the personal realm.
I would also say accountants are not the worst at coming in and giving you an analysis of your existing financial situation. They're not like, they don't manage your finances, but I have used accountants before to be like, I don't understand how I keep losing money. An accountant, and I don't know.
An accountant will have all the skills necessary to do that.
Yes.
Although. I didn't know that you could just walk into an accountant's office and do that, though. I think a lot of them would be annoyed if you did that.
They would, because they would prefer to do this for a business. But you can pay an accountant to do that. So, essentially, the accountant has the skills to do pretty much what everyone else on this list does. But they may not have the experience to do everything that they all do. So, a tax preparer, by the way, is just an accountant that focuses on taxes.
That's just
taxes. Pretty much all they are. Yeah. Financial planners and financial advisors can be different. Some financial planners you pay up front to just do kind of what I was suggesting you could theoretically do with an accountant. So some accountant office firms will have a financial planner attached that does this kind of thing.
Yeah. Financial planners actually are to like manage and plan all of your personal finances.
Well, usually just plan. That's why planner's in the name. Like mm-hmm. you walk in and you go, how I want to retire by 65. They go, okay, what kind of lifestyle do you want? Blah, blah. Okay. So what you need to do, they will pull your books and go, you make so much money. You need to set this much aside for this much aside for this. You can spend this much. Thank you. Have a nice day. And they will see you out, you know. And then the advisor is the other half of the coin, which is I have some of my money going to places that needs to be managed more actively, like especially if you're participating in buying securities, you know, stocks and such. That's where they can be useful.
I think financial advisor, I think someone who can help you pick stocks and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And they usually double up and sit next to the broker, which is their whole job is to buy stocks on your behalf for you.
Right. Although, they're just the middleman for you to interface with the stock market. Yeah.
Yeah. And some people do like the personal approach of folks like this. Like, I want to pick up the phone and call my guy and tell him to buy so many shares of whatever, and they'll just do it. But their job is largely disappearing into automated systems these days. Like,
right. You can just do this on the internet now.
Yeah. Although there are some great services that do this that also offer financial planning as well as a bolt-on.
I was going to say, yeah. My experience talking to an actual broker, the broker and the advisor were the same person. I could sit and talk to an advisor and pick stocks, and then he could put the orders in for me.
Yeah. Or if he's a part of a larger company, like Edward Jones or whatever.
Right. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. So yeah, those are who all those people are. And then the banker is this is the person you go to get money from. You borrow money from this person. Although this job is also largely evaporated due to like the centralization of banks.
Mm-hmm. The banker is now an interface to a computer.
Yeah, the computer says no. Yeah, this is the guy who you say, I want to borrow $10,000 to buy a truck. And they go, okay. And they punch your credit score and say yes or no.
Right.
Even though in the past, it was way different than that.
Right. They would actually, they actually had the authority to make a personal judgment call about whether to lend you this money.
Yeah. Like they may have a window. And also, those people actually still exist. They just don't want to talk to anybody who's talking about borrowing any less than like six figures.
Mm-hmm.
Like they don't, yeah, no, not worth my time.
Yeah.
My computer said no, get out. So it can seem daunting. I know, like we've just spent an hour talking about it, but I do think it's one of those things where you do kind of have to progressively get more into it. Start with budgeting. Like try building a savings account. And this is something you alluded to. You should be able to, depending on how risk averse you are, which by the way, that's a term you're going to hear a ton when you get into this, because that's what most of these people are using to gauge your strategy. And all that means is, how sure of a thing do you want this to be? Because the more sure you want it to be, the tighter the window will be. You'll end up probably around here. The more risk, you know, the more risky you are, you could end up way higher than that, but you could also end up lower than that. And that's what they're trying to gauge, right, with their strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But see if you can set a budget. See if you can get, like, I'm a fairly risky person. I think that, like, 2 months is plenty of, like, emergency funds. Like, zero income for 2 months. I can maintain the exact same lifestyle. That's pretty risky for some people. I've heard some people say 6 months. I think that's a bit extreme, you know, but you should have an idea in your head of what that should be, right? And it will depend on your life circumstance. If you have a skill set that is very easy, like me being a programmer, it's very easy for me to find work. Like I could lose my job tomorrow and almost certainly have a job in 2 weeks. May not be making as much money. It may not be as good, but I could definitely land a job in 2 weeks. I also happen to be very good at interviewing. So again, your results may vary. You think about that, but you know, take the time, figure out like what's the worst that could happen to you if you lose your job and how long you think it'll take you to find a new one, double it. That's probably a good, easy barometer to start mm-hmm. with and then go from there. But then once you get to that point and you actually have some money, then once you have enough in your savings account for like emergency stuff, now take the money that you were putting in that and see about investing it maybe. And you know, that's where it might be worth time doing some research, trying to find some trustworthy sources. It's very accessible. Like you can download apps and get accounts at brokering institutions for free these days. I mean, everybody knows about the Webulls and the Wall. What are the other, Robinhood? All these other ones.
Did you almost say Wall Street?
Wall Street Bets. Don't go to Wall Street Bets.
If you want to keep your money, do not go
to Wall
Street
Bets. That's a great cacophony of people just getting shredded in the stock market.
They got lucky one time and everyone knows about them now.
Yeah.
But they're mostly kings of losing their money.
Exactly. But like Fidelity is a good example. There are a bunch
not
of
sponsored.
Good examples. Not sponsored, although I would.
I would accept a sponsorship from Fidelity. They're pretty cool.
They're pretty awesome, yeah. And a lot of these brokering institutions will have a financial advisor that you can usually call for free
mm-hmm.
and just talk to them about your financial plan. And they can help you set this up if you're that you can. And they'll ask you like, are you trying to do retirement? Are you trying to like,
you're setting up for a house?
Yeah.
What are you trying to do?
What are you trying to do here? And they'll help you figure it out. And they're incentivized to do that because they make money when you make money. A lot of the time that's, you know, they're happy to, when you make money because they're collecting a percentage of it, but they're collecting a percentage of your profits usually. Not always.
That depends a lot. That how brokers make money is changing a lot lately. That is not the topic of this episode.
Also, we're probably not the best people to give you an explanation of that topic.
No. Okay, YouTube shout out of the week.
Yes.
If you want basic education about different financial concepts, there's a cool channel that I found recently called The Plain Bagel. Very appropriate name for how boring finance things can be.
Yes.
And his videos are fairly dry, but they're also short. And I think he does a good job of illustrating all the different financial concepts that can be intimidating at first. So there's your YouTube recommendation for the week.
Yep. And I think we're going to go and wrap this up so that you can just hop on over there to watch some videos. Philosophers.
Yeah. If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.